Bang, bang.
Hello and welcome to Fang Bangers Podcast. We're chaotic, horny friends rewatching the chaotic, horny HBO series True Blood. I'm Elise.
I'm Tasia.
And I'm Melissa.
This week, we're discussing Season 1, Episode 5, Sparks Fly Out. The episode aired on October 5th, 2008. It was written by Alexander Wu and directed by Daniel Minahan. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. This is the little summary. Spurned by an exasperated Sookie, you already know I didn't write that. Bill ends up winning over Adele's church audience with his vivid recollections from the Civil War though Andy and Bud remain suspicious. Sam tries to make the most of his fading opportunity with Sookie, though she's clearly not ready to commit. Ignoring Tara's rebuff, Lafayette convinces Jason to give vampire blood, aka V-juice, another shot. Alone at home, Bill remembers the painful wartime incident that parted him from his beloved family and changed his fate forever. So dramatic.
So dramatic.
So, what were your first impressions of this episode?
For a lot of reasons, I think this is a very iconic episode. Really beginning with Bill having the meeting at the DGD and ending with that cliffhanger, like Lafayette's moment, like there are so many just like moving pieces in this episode that make it like really one, like a standout one from all of season one, which is already a standout season.
Yeah, I was surprised that the Lafayette incident happens in the same place or in the same episode as Grand, because those are two very very iconic moments. So it's like, wow, this is just like a jam-packed episode.
I was just gonna say, like, when I sat down to watch it the first time, like, I completely did not read the premise, so I didn't remember like what episode I was getting into. So it was all like, oh, it's this one.
Yeah, all of the premise I read was like the DGD, but I forgot that the in that same meeting was, you know, we get Bill's origin story, like the bare bones of it, but we get it.
Right. I will say, like, Bill's backstory is not as interesting to me now as it was the first time that I was watching this. And that's just because I feel differently about Bill than I did earlier. I don't think that's a spoiler to say that my opinion changes on characters. But, like, I was a little bit, like, not into those scenes as much, even though I know they're such a big deal.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I never spend a lot of time thinking about, like, how the people became vampires or Bill anymore.
Oh, I definitely like vampire origin stories.
I love
a
vampire origin story, for sure. Yeah.
For me, it's Bill specific.
I do like, sorry, I don't think it's a, I do remember her name.
Yeah.
I don't remember. But I think she's interesting. I think what, like, her whole little, like, Black Widow setup that she's got going on is pretty clever. Just for her, like, her little hunting practices. So I think that's pretty interesting.
I am curious also, like, if she's even telling him, like, any of the truth about, like, how the other situations went. Like,
I feel like 100%. Yeah, I feel like 100% she's setting everybody up. Like, she does the same thing to everybody that she did to Bill, but they're taking her up on it, so she kills them because they deserve to die because they're taking advantage of a woman in this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And she chose Bill because he was the only one who did not. So that was his. I mean, either way, he was fucked in that situation. And one, you know, choose one way and you die forever. Choose another way and you're immortal forever and you lose your family. So
I think I'd rather be a vampire.
Always. Always. Yeah, that is 100%. Always the choice.
It's like sad when he sees his family. It's like that Loki meme. Mm-hmm. Anyway, very sad.
Yeah.
It's just, like, super fucked that she's like, oh, the one person who would definitely not agree to this is the one person that I'm going to turn into a vampire, which...
Yeah.
I mean, even hot lady vampires, or maybe even especially hot lady vampires, have questionable motives and methods. The True Blood story.
This isn't, like, about the episode, but, like, it's so weird to me to, like, watch back on this show and just see people, like, smoking in the bar. Like, that is very strange. That has not been a thing in New Jersey for quite some time.
I have an obligatory I grew up in a cornfield story about this, which is that I believe, I didn't fact check this, I believe that they made it illegal to smoke indoors in Illinois in 2008, maybe? Anyway, a very long time ago from the next date I'm going to throw at you, which is that you could smoke cigarettes inside the bar in my hometown until 2016. And the only reason that they stopped the practice is because there was, like, a brawl that, like, broke out that was so bad that actually, like, the county sheriffs were called instead of just the police from my hometown. And the sheriffs were like, here's all your fines for clearly having been smoking cigarettes for, like, 8 years too long. Like, what's the deal? And so that is when they finally said, like, you have to stop. You really can't do
even
it anymore.
2000, even 2008 seems weirdly recent. Like, I feel like,
yeah,
nowhere.
Well, I was
in
definitely
California
in college where... when it, well, no, what happened was my freshman year in college, I traveled with the basketball team to watch them play an away game on brand. And I wanted to go to a restaurant to smoke a cigarette inside because by the time I started smoking cigarettes, it was already illegal in Illinois.
Yeah.
So in New Jersey, it was 2006, but I remember it was earlier in New York City. So we would like often go into New York City to go to bars and it'd be nice because you'd come home and you didn't smell like cigarettes when you went to the bar at like Rutgers University.
I do sometimes love going into a bar now and being like, oh, you definitely used to be able to smoke cigarettes in here. Like, it smells like my grandma's basement.
So I was That's curious because so I couldn't really remember, like, from the time I was a child, like, a time where smoking indoors in California was legal. Like, I remember being a kid still, like a kid. Mm-hmm. And so I just looked it up and it was 1995.
Wow, that's
actually pretty amazing.
Yeah, apparently California has been referred to as America's non-smoking section.
That's one of the nicest things people say about California.
I know, right?
Not that kind of smoking anyway.
Meanwhile, we're like the first to legalize, first to legalize.
I remember like last time I was in California, like we got like weed delivered to my friend's house. Like it was just
so easy. They're like, we're taking your cigarettes, and but cheap. We will give you.
So cheap.
Yeah. I know Illinois and New Jersey are quite similar for the taxes. It's like,
we've got a pretty hefty tax here in Montana, even though, like, you know, people get crazy about it a little bit. Like, they'll come into the dispensary and be like,
yeah,
and I'll be like, oh, these prices include tax, and they're like, no, there's no tax in Montana, and I'm like, there is on weed, my dude.
Guys,
I promise,
the whole point of getting recreational cannabis, my guy.
Yeah, you think they're legalizing that without a huge paycheck involved for them? Absolutely not.
There's no tax in Montana. Sir, I work here.
I know.
A lot of people here are getting medical, like a medical card, because it's zero tax on medical. Yeah.
Even before the taxes, the prices start like so much higher. But
yeah, I think we're in Montana, lower than like your prices in Illinois, but we're higher than places like Washington and California. Mm-hmm.
Right. Is your dispensary recreation and medical?
Mm-hmm.
Where is that's
cool. Yeah.
Love it. True Blood.
This has been cannabis news with Lise, Tasia, and Melissa.
Like, that should be a segment whenever.
You're all interested, don't lie.
Okay, so imagine you just got back from Fantasia. And your boyfriend, or almost boyfriend, don't know, haven't described it yet, takes a gun from a cop, freaks you out completely, and then makes you listen to, like, throat singing.
Oh, you mean the Dune soundtrack?
I was like, and the funny part is in the last episode, they were like, he was listening to that, like, Kenny G nonsense or whatever, when they went to Fantasia, and I'm just like... Or maybe that was in the book. I think he was listening to Kenny.
Yeah, I think that was the book. And then in the show, he was listening to, like, Cambodian something.
Yeah.
Some sort of Cambodian music.
Right. And I'm just like, this throat singing is
Bill,
just,
drop
like,
the
much.
Spotify playlist. I'm really curious. I just want to look at it.
Bill,
I like how
Bill's
I just
like someone. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, I just want to shout out these notes really quick because there's a fun little Elise has. I do think hosting orgies should be mainstream. And then Melissa has sucking the blood of police should be mainstream.
These are just things, like if the mainstream, like now, yeah. Now I'm like trapped in like, I don't know how else to say this, but like, can the mainstream police like contact us to get our suggestions of what should be considered mainstream activities?
Mainstream jail abolition.
It's like orgies and ACAB. Come on.
I mean, ACAB should definitely be mainstreaming. Come on.
Yes, but I felt like Suki was being orgies shouldn't be main hosting orgies isn't mainstreaming, and I'm like, Suki, you are so nice. I was like, well, my sweet summer child.
Yeah.
Well, I think Bill makes a good point in that scene actually, where he's like, just because you don't know something or you don't understand something doesn't make it bad, and doesn't mean like, you know, her grandmother says the same thing basically.
It's, yeah,
like,
she,
you
does.
Know, it's okay to not understand something, but you can't really, you know, form a hatred based on that, because that's not really fair. And I think this is necessary for Suki to hear, because she does have sort of judgmental moments despite being a relatively open-minded person compared to like a lot of the people she's around.
I think she's a little bit more open-minded in the book, but I think they also throw less things at her to judge. I agree with you completely, and I do feel like she like loosens up a little bit over the next few seasons.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. But she's, like, very uptight right now, and it's, like, very amusing to watch.
Yeah.
Is she referring to the vampires that she found at Bill's house? Am I remembering that correctly?
I think
as
so.
As if, like, he was hosting the orgy. Yeah. Yes,
in front of her.
Yeah. Mike Johnson.
Liam.
Yeah.
I don't remember which one was Liam and which one was Malcolm, but...
I think
Liam
one
was
is
the bald
Malcolm.
One.
Oh.
Okay. I was
okay. Oh, okay, maybe, who knows.
No, I think me and Tasia are right.
I think that you are too, and I think that's great, because in my mind he's just Maudette's vampire.
Maudette's.
Wait, so we all saw the tape. I just think that like Suki lashes out about that also because like she got scared in that moment, but that's like so typical Suki, which is that if she's not scared and she's decided it's fine, then it is fine, but if she gets scared, then it's like it's a problem for everybody.
I keep thinking about how judgmental Veronica Mars is.
Oh yeah.
And like I feel like she's the same way, where if like it's okay with her, it's okay for like for everybody, and if it's not okay with her, it's not okay for anyone. And it just is very similar.
Yeah, no, you're right.
These mid-2000s white ladies, I can't believe it.
Pretty much. It was literally around the same time. One last thing I just want to say before we get into the plot, everyone else can obviously add, but like the whole Southern independence bit at the DGD meeting is like so uncomfortable for me to watch. I literally hate it. I feel like they could make this just a church meeting about local history, and it would not change anything for me.
In world, they could, but I think it, as far as the TV show, it's part of like establishing that scenery where like this is a place that is extremely bigoted, that has this long history of.
Yeah.
You know, like I think to set the scene, so to speak, it makes sense that it is like that. In world, absolutely. And it makes me very disappointed actually in Suki's grandmother Adele, that she she's got basically a Confederate flag pinned to her dress. And you know, like you basically raised Tara. Like what a thing to kind of rub in her face. I don't know.
I'm surprised Tara went to that.
Yeah, I think she is too.
I really enjoyed that we get to Tara's little quip about like Sam and Suki want to sit with her. She's like, oh, great, just what we need, more white people. But I just think that I don't really understand. I guess because the show like can't actually use an established like daughters of the whoever or whatever, but they invent this like group, and they go to lengths in like the marketing material to not call it, you know, descendants of the Confederacy, but then they put the iconography all over. And it's kind of the time of the TV show, but watching it now, you're like, you're not doing anything.
I think that's my issue. I'm looking at it through 2023 lens.
And we should.
I obviously knew that
Confederacy was bad, you absolutely could still go to those towns in Louisiana and see the same exact thing today, even. Like, there's a lot. I think it does, like, set the scene for like, the kind of environment they're in and why so much of this show is kind of about, like, supernatural civil rights or, you know, like, a queer allegory or, you know, all of those things, is that it is kind of all pointing to, like, where they're at and how, you know, they are in a dangerous position for, like, you know, this show couldn't take place in, like, Southern California. Like, it couldn't really exist anywhere else because that kind of level, well, not necessarily anywhere else, but, like, there is, like, that specific level of, like, just blatant bigotry that you find in places like that, that kind of make that scene believable.
For sure. So instead of going, like, scene by scene, I thought it'd be nice to separate by kind of, like, characters, if everyone's cool with that.
Yeah.
I separated into kind of Jason, Lafayette, and Tara are kind of somewhat involved with each other this episode. And then I did a section on Bill and a section on Sookie, and we can just go through it. The episode starts off with Tara, like, 3 a.m. banging on Lafayette's door. Like, why'd you give my boyfriend, well, she wishes, and it kind of is funny because she goes into explaining, like, telling Lafayette, like, what happened at the ER and all that. But so great.
So she, like, goes into his house and is immediately just, like, throwing shit. But because someone was coming into his house at 3 a.m., he already grabbed a bat. And he is just hitting the things that she's throwing at him. And it is so funny to me. He's so cool about it. He's like, bring it on, hooker. I was all parish in high school.
Like, he is extremely cool about that.
I think that he's very emotionally intelligent, at least at this point. Like, I don't want anybody to hold me to that, depending on what happens. But he knows that she needs space to express this, and he loves and respects her, and so he's cool with it. And he keeps telling, he's like yelling at her, like, throwing my shit, destroying my home is not going to do anything. And she screams back at him, yeah, it'll make me feel better. And he just is rolling a blunt and says, like, okay. Like, that is a good enough reason to destroy my shit.
Oh, wait, if we talk about weed again, we need to start just calling it, like, Lafayette's Cannabis Corner or something.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry. So Lafayette goes over to see Jason, and Jason takes that meat thermometer and shoves it inside of a sausage, and I am, like, so glad I don't have a penis.
He had props ready. Like, I don't believe for one second that Jason had that kind of meat thermometer already in his house. I don't believe for one second that he already had, like, just a sausage ready. I think he went to the store, bought those things in the hopes that somebody would come over and be like, Jason, what happened? And then he could demonstrate. I believe this about Jason.
I agree about the sausage, but I think his mom would have left the house with the meat thermometer. Is, but it, I think it, maybe the meat thermometer doesn't work anymore, probably.
And to be fair, I think it hasn't been established in the show yet that this is their parents' house, I don't believe. Oh. That was left to him. I don't really consider that a spoiler.
Yeah. Watch out, guys. I think that was just said in, it's said in the book.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why.
So I think though, like, on a first watch or something, watching that, I would not for one second believe that Jason had that meat thermometer that he had, like, purchased with his own money. Like, he had ever carried himself into a store to buy that.
Well, we know he eats all his meals like Grands or Merlots, so.
Yeah, exactly.
We can't believe that he has beer. A bratwurst.
I was like, I couldn't tell if the show wanted us to think that was, like, a breakfast sausage, but I was like, that looked like a dinner sausage.
Yeah, that's like a kielbasa, like, or something.
Yeah, something. I love that he calls it a fuck of a day, and that is something that I need to start saying in my lexicon.
And how about Lafayette just full on narking on Tara for her feelings for Jason?
I mean, does she deserve that for throwing his shit around? Maybe. She might.
And to be fair, I'm sure he like knows that Jason wasn't gonna react badly to that, you know, just in his Jason way.
the way that I, the things I believe about Lafayette is that, like, he knows that whatever happens, something, like, something will have happened. And Tara can either move on or they can be happy together. But
I think that's a really good point that, like, something's got to give. He's probably sick of hearing about, like, just the unrequited part. It's like, you know, let's get this out in the air so we can fucking do something about it,
if
or ruin
Jason,
it, or whatever
like,
needs
I knew
to
Jason,
happen.
You would not be into him.
So, yeah, like, exactly.
I feel like Lafayette is so smart, and, like, honestly, everything that happened with Jason and Tara, like, needed to happen so that Tara could just get over this.
Yeah, yeah, it's like setting her free.
And he. He brings over the goods. He brings over more V, and he's like, okay, Jason.
He told Jason, nice penis draining story. You want to go again?
Yes. Yeah. And he's like, well, we've broken the seal, so I know you're going to do this drug again.
Yeah. But a little chiller this
yes,
time.
Yes. And he treats it as this, like, mystical property. He treats it with reverence. He teaches him, like, this ritualistic way to, like, you know, both do the drug and, like, experience it. And I just think that, like, I think that the V knows the intention of the person ingesting it.
Ooh. Okay, so I was originally resistant to this theory of yours that, like, you know, I read it as in the notes. I was like, but then he does talk a lot about how the V itself is life. It is life force. It is not like
Jason says,
you know,
later.
It is not sustaining life. It is life. It is
they take
life.
They give it back. We give. We take it back. Yeah.
Yeah. I can. I'll try to whistle past that graveyard because it has bothered me for, like, over a decade that you know, Jason can drink an entire vial of the shit and just get a violent boner when one drop sends him on, like, a fucking trip. Like,
it's,
I don't.
Yeah. And I just,
you know, I'm gonna buy the V nose.
I would like to propose that the difference is the love. Because
it's like when you take mushrooms, you know, if you're in a bad spot, if you're, like, in a situation that you're not 100% comfortable with, you will have a bad trip. Like, it's important to, like, put yourself in the right like environment. Maybe it's like that. It's an environmental thing.
I was going to say, I think it's the same with, like, LSD, and it's interesting because they put the blood on those little papers, and it's definitely acid, right? It took it like acid, and so I agree completely that, you know, your mood really, I mean, I guess that is true of any drug, but, like, it's true more with hallucinogens, I think, where, like,
and because
your mood gets exponential.
Sookie took all that blood from Bill, and she got healed. There were some effects, but she wasn't tripping. She had, like, enhancements, like, she was, like, her senses were, like, overhealed, but she wasn't having, like, hallucinations.
I wonder if you're drinking blood to heal yourself, if that, like, gets used in your body, and so that maybe that part doesn't go to your,
like,
brain
that
as
is
much,
the magic.
And then, like, if you drink more, like, the magic is, like, the, you know, it heals you, and then, like, if you have more than what you need there, you'll start feeling like
I believe it.
I just need to woo-woo magic it, because I cannot make it heads or tails of it in any other way.
No, you're right though, it doesn't make sense, like,
like, what is the dosing here? I do not understand it at all.
Tasia needs nutritional facts.
I need to see the label. I need to see everything.
That's so funny. I loved Jason just, like, being so engrossed in Bill's story. Like, he felt like he was that young kid. Or, like, the one that, like, gets shot. Or I don't know if it was the guy's great-grandfather or, like, the other guy. But he was, like, really in it.
He was.
It was wonderful. Can we talk about how cute it is that Hoyt wanted to try?
I love Hoyt so much. He is Hoyt, a
Hoyt's the best, and also baby. Like, right? But also, I feel like if True Blood were a thing, we all would have tried it.
Totally.
There's no, like, the curiosity alone, like, would spike the sales, like, would make it a successful company.
It would make it, like, out of stock for vampires.
I know.
Oh my god,
because we are terrible.
So
yeah.
They would, like, we would be the horrible white people just, like, stealing other people's resources.
All those dieting people taking, what is that, like, Ozempic or whatever? Taking drugs from diabetics that they actually need.
Yes, I did see that. It's disgusting. I was going to admit that, like, if I, like, cut myself and I, like, put my, like, finger in my mouth to, like, stop the bleeding, like, it doesn't taste horrible. Like, True Blood's probably not as bad as Hoyt thinks it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely going to be probably pretty coppery. Not that great, but I wonder if vampires could drink, like, flavored blood. Like, you know, you can get this is a podcast so far about a lot of drugs, but, like, yes. You know how you can get, like, a flavored you can get flavored, yes, like, vape cartridges and stuff for your THC. Why not flavored? I mean, would the vampires enjoy that or not? They probably wouldn't because they just want blood.
Is it in this show or in some other vampire show where the lore is that if you feed off of a drunk human, you get a little drunk?
Yeah, I think that's, I don't know if that's in this one, but I know it's like, in a lot of,
okay,
it's in like every other vampire lore I can think of.
So,
like,
maybe it's this or Vampire Diaries or something.
It's in Buffy. It's in it's in Anne Rice. Like all of the.
Okay, so that's a thing.
I think it's a pretty canon vampire thing.
Yeah. So that, and it's like the thing about, like, men eating pineapple. It's like, if you guys get it.
Oh, yeah. Like, you can eat stuff to make your blood taste better?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, grass-fed beef.
I smell what you're stepping in.
Now I have pineapple sliced by Tuvalu. So everyone's at the bar after the church meeting, which I think is amazing. I forget what day of the week it's supposed to be.
It's like a Wednesday or something.
Yeah, I love a town where everyone's at the bar on a Wednesday. That is like,
and they're all buzzing after going to this meeting, and so they need to, like, be with each other. It was kind of that way after my dad died too. Like, everyone was in the bar. They want to chit chat. They want to gossip. They want to see who's out.
It's the watering hole.
Yep.
So yeah, we obviously need to mention the absolutely fucking iconic Lafayette moment with the AIDS burger, which is just so fucking satisfying to watch. Lafayette is an icon. I love it because it's Lafayette is the most iconic character in the show. Like, he's got the best lines, he's got the best scenes, and out of all of those, like, this is his most iconic, and it's probably, like, one of the most iconic scenes in the entire show. And I love that, and I love Jason high-fiving him after.
And that little dance. Mm-hmm.
Jason loves it. And you know what? I love it because not only does Lafayette tell off these people in such a beautiful and eloquent fashion, but he fucking beats the shit out of them.
He fucks them up.
Easily. He doesn't even break a sweat. Like, it's hot,
this
actually.
Is like this is like the fantasy of what you, like, having the right words at the right time. Like, this is what I want to say in that moment. Like, and you're just like, Lafayette.
And having the muscles to beat them down, too, because, like, three dudes, and they're all the ones that leave with their tails tucked. It's great.
And he ends it with, tip your waitress. Tip your waitress.
Oh, yeah, that was great. I still hate that it happens, like, in general. Like, in life, it's more like that.
Well, and it's like these people went out to this event so that they could torment a vampire, and when that doesn't work, they go where they know someone is who they can torment for some other reason because they're little close-minded tiny dick fucks.
Like, and, like, what losers? What fucking loser? Like, oh, the fucking baddest thing I can do right now is put some garlic in a garlic press and point it at a vampire. Like, you're fucking lame.
you're a loser. They were, like, 25. You're a loser. Like, they weren't, like, teenagers.
They insult Lafayette through Arlene. Like, you are going to take a woman just out here trying to get a paycheck to provide for her little children, and you are going to make her, like, be an accomplice to, like, a hate crime you're trying to commit?
Yeah.
You're a loser.
Mm-hmm. Embarrassing for them all around.
You know who was great? That lady that got divorced.
Yes. She's having the best time. Her divorce went through today.
Honestly, I think any of us getting a divorce deserves a Jason that very night. You know, just somebody that's going to show you the best time of your life and just zero, you know what I mean? Like, you get to walk away feeling great. And then that's the end.
I'm glad that Hoyt didn't go sleep with her.
No, Hoyt is way too.
Because he's a sweet little baby.
He would get so attached.
Mm-hmm. He's like, so when do I move in?
He's trying to be her next ex-husband.
Right.
He has I've never had sex before energy to me. And I mean that like I don't think negatively. He has. No, I know. But like, yeah. we didn't know that yet. Yeah. But like, I just feel like that lady needs to have the ride of her life.
She needs the Jason.
It's not going to happen with Hoyt. No offense to Hoyt.
Sweet, sweet little baby Hoyt.
It didn't matter because she saw him drinking the true blood anyway and like was very much like, no thanks. Or like they assumed that she wouldn't be interested anymore.
No, yeah. she looked pretty uninterested.
Hoyt's like, oh shit.
little dummy, little precious dummy.
Jason sees all these visions of like forest goddess Tara, and it's very cute and funny. And then he mm-hmm. is just confessing his love for her, telling her like, I didn't realize, you know, like we could be something, you know, whatever he's saying. And it's just like, it makes me so passionately upset that she has to realize that like the boy she likes is saying all these things she wants to hear. But then she realizes that he's on drugs. And so it's like, oh, it doesn't count. But maybe it could count because yeah. it's like, it's just drugs. Everybody does them. Who cares? It's fine. And then it's like, no, that makes me feel bad. And it's like, I don't know if you can tell that this similar thing happened to me in high school.
It happened to me too.
Like multiple times. I have like so many boys who do drugs. But anyway, like it's just too much.
Yeah. There was one boy in specific that this happened with.
I know. And it's just lot.
Like my senior year of high school.
And you say like, come back to me when you're sober. And then they never show up. And you're like, cool. I don't know if I feel better or worse about myself than if I would have just gone with you the first time.
Oh, we've all been there.
And then catching him, like, fucking the divorce girl outside. Like, I will literally kill Jason in this moment. It makes me so, makes me so mad.
Okay, but he introduced them to each other.
I know!
Fucking. That was the most insane thing I ever saw.
It's so funny. He literally has no idea what he's doing. I mean, like, he knows what he's doing. He's fucking a girl and being polite, but he has no idea, like, what he's doing
and
with his life.
He's fucking a girl and being polite.
And then he gets trash dumped on him. And then, like, he starts rubbing the trash on her. Yeah. It was 10 out of 10, no notes.
Sorry, Melissa. That's exactly what I wrote in my notes about Jason being high at the meeting. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, that was great. He looked real disheveled. Like, his hair was kind of mussed. It was great. Oh, Jason. I just, like, when he introduced them, I was like, is he serious right now?
He's very not. He very much not serious. The most unserious person yeah. we could ever know.
I love you, but you are not a serious person.
I saw a really funny tweet or something today that said, or might have been on Blue Sky, that was like, when a leftist says you are very unserious, that's the closest thing you're going to say to, I wish you were dead. I was like, that's not untrue.
Oh, that's really funny.
I was hysterical.
Okay. We have to say goodbye to our friends.
Up to who, Melissa?
Beal. Vampire Beal. Yeah, this man has to do some public speaking. And it's just...
Smart about it. It's gross, but he's so smart about it.
Yeah, actually, I enjoyed the scene more than I thought I would when it was, like, getting set up in the show. I was like, you know, like, okay, let's, like, get the Confederate meeting over with. But, what Bill does with his time is very interesting.
Well, it's great because he's sitting back there in the kitchen or whatever waiting to go on, and he can hear everybody talking about him. Yeah. Like, he hears all of the trepidation, all of the, you know, nobody showed up to that meeting wanting to like him. They showed up to watch a train wreck. They showed up to ogle and point at the vampire like it was, you know, a circus freak show or something. And he knows all of this. So what does he do? He appeals to like their nature, which is that like post 9/11 patriotism, brother. Like, you know, he goes up there and he, you know, it's Old Glory. He pulls off the flag, he sets it back up, and he's like, as a patriot of this fine country, you know, it's, and he plays them like a fucking fiddle, and he has them all in the palm of his hand. Like, that was so smart, so manipulative.
he's obviously from this community, and so I believe that what happens in this meeting is genuine, and it could have happened mm-hmm. regardless of, like, whoever asked him, hey, did you know my great-great-grandfather or whatever?
Yeah. But
the way that he has such a specific story about that man's grandfather, like, makes that man seem like a plant, but really it's just, like, Bill... I mean, these people never had a chance against him. Like, he is them. Mm-hmm. He is a...
Yeah.
A real yeah. life, like, grandfather of their community, for better and for worse.
And that's all he had to do, is just be like, I know your fucking ancestors. Mm-hmm. Like, I am this town.
Mm-hmm.
He had them all captivated, especially Hoyt's mom. Like, she seems like, I know she's, like, an asshole, but she seems like she'd be one to, like, I know she's really judgmental, so it was, like, really surprising to me. Like, I had forgotten that she was, like, asking him questions and, like, engaging in, mm-hmm. in what he was saying.
Yeah. She's almost, like, annoyed that he can be around the cross, because she's like, how was I supposed to know? And it's like, nobody's mad yeah, at you for thinking I loved that.
It. It just, they did a couple,
she's
like,
always there for the drama. She loves the drama.
Yeah. But they also got to play with some vampire tropes with her. So, like... The cross, the mm-hmm. taking the picture, mm-hmm. like, it was like a cute way to be like, okay, this is how being a vampire works in this show a little bit.
Yeah.
In our Descendants meeting, we get to spend just the tiniest little bit more time with Terry Belfer, which so far, I can't remember exactly where this character goes, but so far, I, like, really love how the show is using that character, especially because of the time that this is in, you know, in the mid-2000s, several years on from, you know, the, you know, never-ending war and all that. And this is a veteran who, like, really deeply relates to what Bill's going through in, like, a profound way that even Bill doesn't understand. But Terry gets to, like, give him this nice hug. And I just think it's so nice. It's just such a nice moment.
I like Terry.
Me too.
Terry's a good boy.
I know. I'm, like, a little skeptical of staying, like, blanket statements about these characters, because, like, I don't remember all the details, but I know the show goes off the rails, and I can't remember whose character mm-hmm. survives.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I got you.
It's funny, as I'm watching it, I'm getting, like, these weird flashbacks to things that happen later. I don't know how much later. I have no yeah. fucking idea. Like, random characters that I remember from, like, bits mm-hmm. and pieces, and so I'm, like, very excited to figure yeah. out what all of these little flashbacks mean that I don't remember right now.
When Melissa was talking about Lafayette earlier, I was remembering some stuff that happens later that I'm not even going to say it in the spoiler section because it's not related to this episode, but, like, I'll tell you guys afterwards.
Okay.
After the meeting, they Andy and Bud show up at Bill's house to question him about the murders, and, like, Andy thinks it's just, like, a waste of time. He's like, we have no proof. And it's funny because, you know, Bill's saying if it was a vampire, like, it would be a lot messier. Like, the blood, they would have.
Well, he kind of killed two birds with one stone there, right? He got them to look at this piece of logic in the face that, like, if a vampire had killed those women, a vampire would not have left them with all their blood. Like, a vampire would have taken the opportunity yeah. to eat. But also, like, described something so grisly and disgusting to them that, like, sent them packing immediately. With the good excuse as, like, oh, okay, well, he's probably not the guy because he's a vampire.
Yeah. And, like, they're not stupid. Like, they know that's true. So it's mm-hmm. not like they're like, I don't know. Yeah, like,
yeah. But it gives them a legitimate reason to leave yeah. after they're already, like, disgusted and they want to go.
For sure.
Like, would you like a fresca? Kind of made me want a fresca, I'm not going to lie.
I love that Bill doesn't own a refrigerator.
I watched the episode a little bit stoned. So when he's like, would you like a fresca? I was like, you know what? That sounds like it would hit right now, actually.
Yeah, I think I would, actually. Thank you.
It's funny. After the meeting, when he's walking home, he is walking up to his house and he sees, or he's reminded of the last time he saw his family, which was right after he was turned. So you kind of see a vision of his wife and was it two kids, I
mm-hmm.
think, on the porch. And we get a flashback to when he was looking for help and met his maker, I guess. I did not intend to phrase it that way.
My maker. I do want to point out, which is something I think I'll circle back to in the spoiler section for those who have seen before, is Bill's interesting reaction to learning Andy's last name, the name Belfer.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And in the book, there's another Belfer. There's Portia, his sister.
Yeah, I just think it... we don't get to learn a lot about, like, Bill and his maker, just the mechanics of how it happened. And, like, really, his maker was just a cruel person. And we don't know for sure if that's all vampires or if that's special to her. But I think it's interesting, like, we very much see Bill trying very hard not to be a cruel person. And so I just, now I am, like, wondering, what happened in the interim? Like, did you ever get along with this person? Were you, like, raised this way as a vampire? Like, is that why you're going so hard into mainstreaming? Like, what's the deal here? Sorry. Right. And this is very sad. And I am, like, bummed out for you. Because he could have gone to his family. And I'm sure his wife loved him. And she would have been like, oh, you're going to stay young and hot while I just get old. And you have unlimited, like, energy resources to provide for me. I'm retiring.
Yeah.
And you'll just be hot. It'll be great.
Bang all the time.
Yeah.
I also think that, like, her character, like, not, I'm not going to go into, like, future stuff. I actually, frankly, don't remember much about, like, more flashbacks or whatever that we get from his maker. I think we can probably assume that, you know, like, we're going to learn more about her in the future. But I do think that, like, her presence, like, that whole scene brings up an interesting point about what it would be like to be a woman in, you know, in times in the past where, like, obviously there's a lot more inherent danger in being a woman, especially a woman on your own, which she was. And she's a predator, though. Like, she's got her own protection. But it is interesting that I think that she kind of sets herself up as, like, that she's a trap. Like, she is the trap.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of preys on men's looking at this at her as an opportunity. And then her kind of flipping that on them. And I actually really like that. I know that, like, I think it's tragic what she did to Bill, because she did take, like, literally the only decent guy that came to her house and robbed him of his life, his human life, and his family. That sucks. But I do, I think I really understand her whole thing that she's doing there.
Yeah, I would eat all the men for sure. Who came to my door.
Yeah, girls gotta eat.
Girls gotta eat for sure. But I think that if I was going to try to find someone to turn forever, I would, like, find someone who, like, liked me.
Yeah, yeah. Because she probably could have, like, I don't know, I'm, you know, like, creating this fantasy about what she could have done with somebody else. Like, oh, she could have, like, because she really could have. She could have found somebody that, like, didn't want to do that but wanted to maybe take her up on her offer to stay for a little while. Maybe, like, you know, they could figure something out and she could find somebody who was willing to give up that. I mean, that could not have been hard. Like, hey, would you like basically infinite power and eternal life? Yes, please.
Yeah. I mean, probably to fuck a bunch of times.
Exactly. Like, she did not need to take that by force. That was rude.
Yeah. That part was not great, Bob.
Not great, Bob. Bad luck for our friend Bill's maker.
Yeah. So is that it?
Yeah. Shall we talk about the lady of the hour?
Yes.
Sookie.
I absolutely, we mean Sookie, but I'm going to talk about Adele first.
Okay, for sure.
I kind of love that Sookie's gran, like, doesn't let on that these people are screaming their heads off at her about the vampires coming to the church. Adele is a classy lady, and even though she is into Confederate stuff,
has a slight preoccupation with Confederate history.
It's complicated, folks.
I do love when that old lady is screaming at her, "You will go to hell for this." Sookie comes in, she's like, "All right, well, same to you." Just like,
that was great.
The iconic, like, Southern politeness that is just, like, barely concealed daggers.
Yeah.
Sookie gets asked out on a date by her boss.
She sure
not
does.
At all problematic.
Ew.
It ends up being gross the way he does it. It's, like, gross that he does it, for one. He acts like, he says, like, he needs to escort her to this old lady meeting, and, like, that's ridiculous. She's a grown woman. Her grandma's the leader. It's an old lady meeting. Like,
yeah.
But he also says, like, oh, she's like, oh, you're asking me out. He's like, yeah, and people are looking, so you better say yes. And it's like, what?
No, it's so manipulative. Yeah, because like, he does it in front of a crowd. He does it, like, I mean, him being her employer is bad enough. Like, if they had been
I love out, that Bill called that out.
Yeah, like, when, yeah, because Sam's like, oh, not when we're on, well, not when we're off duty. But you asked her out when you were on duty. So, like, your argument, even if your argument were valid in any way, which it's not, even if it were valid, you asked her out when you were on duty. So fuck off. Like, that is, it's so manipulative. Yeah. It's so gross.
Just, this isn't like a spoiler for anything that happens, but in the book, Sookie was not going to go to the meeting because she didn't want to see Bill, but still said yes when Sam invited her.
Yeah. So I have a little note about the book in this section as well, and it's also not a spoiler. But yeah, so book Sookie tells us that she's not planning on seeing Bill until he makes an appointment to see her, which is very powerful, and I love it. But she decides to go with Sam, and then when Bill catches her eye at the meeting, she acknowledges him, but very intentionally doesn't smile at him. And then, in the narration of the book, it says, and I quote, "Even in the crowd, I stood at the edge of the deep pool of his silence." And I just thought that was so beautiful. It's like, crows. Thank you, Charlene Harris.
Charlene's got bars.
I know.
That's. I read that today and already forgot that that happened. So that's where my brain
I like
is.
Had to write it down because I literally was like, I cannot believe this beautiful description of like what this moment felt like to Sookie. Wow.
I'm just picturing Melissa just like clutching her pearls now, like while she reads it. Hand to the chest, like gasp. I love it.
That's so funny.
The pool of his silence, you guys.
It's a good line.
That is like an AOL Instant Messenger. Oh wait, message. If I ever heard one.
Be right back. Setting it to my bios everywhere.
Yes.
I stood at the edge of the deep pool of his silence.
I may have to put that in the bio for our podcast socials.
Oh my god. The deep cut, y'all.
I think my favorite line of the episode is just when Bill is like, no, legally, you still are.
It literally made me snort. He says, like, the line delivery is just so funny. No, no, legally, you still are.
It's so good.
I just
good.
Feel like if I was a vampire, like, I know we all have our friends that tell us don't go to law school, but, like, if I was a vampire, I would just be studying all different things for, like, ever and just... know everything,
just be
like
out in the world just correcting, well, actually.
So like I wouldn't be surprised if Bill had like a law degree mm-hmm. from somewhere, because what else are you gonna do with your time?
Bone.
Maybe I'm just a big nerd. Yeah, I guess that's true. host orgies.
Yes. So you're Elise, you have like your next note talking about Sookie hearing thoughts, and it made me think about, you know, that scene where she's talking to Andy and she just fully confirms, like, no hesitation, she confirms that she can hear people's thoughts. And I just think it's a really interesting note about the fact that she's not, I mean, just a few episodes ago, she was hiding her abilities or, like, playing it off, or, you know, she had her close people that really knew, you know, like, obviously, Gran, Jason, Tara, they all knew for sure. Everybody else speculated. Everybody else kind of, like, got suspicious. Yeah. She would blow it off. And I think it really is a testament to how much more comfortable that she's feeling with herself and how confident she is. And I do think, like, as little as I like Bill, I think that his presence is helping her feel less alone in her strangeness and more comfortable just being other.
Yeah.
And kind of owning that. Like, she's coming out of her own coffin, so to speak.
Yes, I definitely agree. I hadn't thought about that, but like until I read your note, but I think it's spot on.
Yeah.
In the book, Andy Belfer goes through, like, he has suspicions, and so he plays these like mind games with her to the point where she cries. So I'm really glad she has way more agency in telling him in the TV show than what happens in the book which is that he torments her to the point of revealing herself and crying. Mm. And that is horrible.
Yeah, this is a much more powerful moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was on her own terms.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this turns into, like, a workplace comedy for, like, a hot second, because Tara pops out of the woodwork 13 seconds after Sookie agrees to go out with Sam. And it's like, you're going out with Sam? And Sookie's like, what? Like, it just happened.
It just happened.
And Tara's mad.
You forgot that Tara and Sam slept together, like, 2 episodes ago. So I was like, okay, this is... I read it differently because I had forgotten that. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm totally a nosy bitch. I want to know all my friends are doing always.
Yeah.
And then Melissa reminded me that, yeah.
I think it's fair, though, because I think she is. I mean, you know, like we all are with our friends, especially, like, our close, you know, female friends, is that, like, we are all so up each other's asses, basically. Like, I have to know everything about what's going on in your life. Like, it's just, you know, our love language, right? Mm-hmm, and, So I do think that, yeah, like, she definitely has ulterior motives for being like, hey, what the fuck?
I think really
but
she's
also,
just...
even without it, she's like, what the fuck? Yeah. I need to know.
I think that the only thing that is affected by the fact that she had already slept with Sam is the projection of her anger when she's like, keep this girl away from me. And it's really just because she needs to put up that barrier between her and Sookie so Sookie doesn't find out she already slept with Sam and then didn't tell her and then yelled at her for not telling her.
Oh, right, yeah.
Definitely projecting.
That would be a vicious cycle.
Yeah, she's super projecting. Oh, this was back at the meeting, actually, that I forgot to mention, but Bill's telling a story. He's getting emotional thinking about the last time that he saw his wife and children. And you see, like, she goes in there, so, like, you know, fuck Bill, I don't want to be his girlfriend, blah, blah, blah. And then she sees him, like, get a little choked up, and, you know, he's a sad boy for a minute, and she is immediately, like, you see it on her face. She's like, I have to fix him. I have to help him. I have to, like, she's right back in.
This is all your fault, Sam.
Yeah.
If she wouldn't have been at that meeting.
Yep.
Yeah. At least not in the book.
Yeah, true.
I feel like all the interactions with Sam and Sookie make me so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It just feels so, like, he basically, they're at their coffee and pie or dessert or whatever, and, like, he says he hates people, which, like, first of all, is such a turnoff to me, like, for men. Women, I don't care if you hate people, that's fine. But, like, there's something wrong with you. Like, it's not cute. It's like,
yeah, it's like that lone wolf thing, you know, like,
you don't have to brag about being antisocial, like,
yeah.
And I also think when men do it, it's always a lot of times, like, it's a lead up to, like, oh, I hate people, but I like you, though. And it's like, yeah, this is our first, like, date, though. Relax. You have no idea.
And it's like, okay,
it's like love bombing, right?
Probably, yeah.
It's like, there's probably something wrong with you then.
Yeah.
Or do people not like
you? Like anyone.
Or are you an
asshole? Right, exactly.
So, like,
like,
so
is it everyone else, or is it maybe you?
Yeah, I pray. So then she's like, people that open bars, like, don't hate people. Like, that doesn't make sense. And then he says the grossest thing fucking ever. Maybe I wanted to meet some pretty waitresses. Okay, that's fucking disgusting.
Because
you basically are admitting that you're trying to run a sex cult, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, with his enforcing of that disgusting, it's not that the outfits are disgusting, it's that he's enforcing it. That he wants all of his waitresses to wear these teensy tiny shorts and tank tops, you know, like skin tight everything. He knows exactly what
he's
doing.
Yeah, they're like baby doll tees and like short shorts.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I think Sam represents, like, unintentionally by the show, I think, because this is like, you know, early to mid 2000s. Like, we're still giving the quote unquote nice guys the benefit of the doubt. But I think this really shows, like, how insidious this kind of dude is. This, like, I'm your friend, I quote unquote protect you, I have a right to you, I have, and if you do anything that makes you kind of step off of that pedestal that I put you on for even a second, I'm gonna punish you for it. And I think it's really interesting that for all of Sam's, like, I'm just trying to protect you, I just want you to be safe, I would do literally anything to keep you safe, he is showing more violence towards her than Bill ever has.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, kind of pushing her against the thing, like, encasing her body, like,
yelling at her.
He's being aggressive, yelling in her face. Like, he seems more dangerous to me than the fucking vampire does. So,
and he's like yelling at her with the, like, intention of making her feel bad about, like, her behavior. So it's like,
It's about shame.
Yeah. Like, he wants to be her dad and her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that fucking paternalistic shit is gross.
Yeah.
One line that's, like, not exact, but similar in the book and in the show is, like, when he's, like, you have no future with him. And she's, like, basically, like, he's not going anywhere. And I just feel like he's, everything he says about her and vampires is, like, humans do all of those horrible things mm-hmm. to each other. Like, you can't mm-hmm. just be, like, you know, he could turn on you, like, while you're screaming in her face. It's just...
Right, and living in the world as a woman who dates men, like, you have that to fear from everyone that you date. Like, they are all potential predators to you.
It's scary out there.
Yep.
Especially because this has only been hinted at in the show, but, like, Sam isn't exactly what he says he is. Like, why are you rolling around on bed sheets? Like, why do you bark mm-hmm. in your sleep?
Yeah.
I have questions. Why are your thoughts not clear to Sookie? Why?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are we done talking about the body of the episode?
Yeah. We just have to talk about...
Oh, wait. The end.
The cliffhanger.
Yeah.
I'm, like, trauma hiding that from myself.
I know.
It didn't happen.
That's why they put that Lafayette rant in this episode.
I really, really, really forgot that this happened in this episode until, like, really until the end when that scene when Sookie's foot slides on the blood. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I remember now. Like, that, I think her foot slide to me is almost as iconic as some of the other things in this episode.
Yeah.
For me, like,
yeah,
it's just something I don't forget. I mean, I forgot it was in this episode, but I didn't forget.
I did forget, like, it that it happened this early in the show. Like,
yeah,
I thought,
yeah,
because there's another scene not completely different from this one that I guess is later on that I always remembered as happening first. So, like, this was kind of like I was expecting that thing to happen at the end of this episode,
right.
not for it to actually be grand. So that was, yeah,
I think
I'm looking forward to finding out what thing you thought it was going to be.
I think I know what to say.
Yeah.
Oh, what I was going to say is that I think that you're just lured into, like, a false sense of security because in your memory of the show, you know Gran's not there. But in these first five episodes, she is a main character and you're just getting deeper and deeper into who she is the whole time. And then the rug's pulled out from under you because when Gran's talking to Sookie about the meeting with Bill, she says this thing about how she's, you know, she's more worried about what they'll do to him, like the... You know, Bontom's
the human
people,
community, yeah.
The, you know,
yeah,
everybody who's there. I was thinking of a bunch of names to call them and then change our mind. but rather than what he might do to them, because, like, he's just a guy and he's made every good faith, you know, gesture of really trying to be in this community, you know, whatever he does in his home life aside. But I just think that's very astute, especially for a woman of her age, which also makes it weird that she does the Confederacy thing, but that's just a plot hole at this point. And I just love her so much in that moment. And then for her to die at the end of this episode is really a gut punch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not unlike another show that we have all bonded over, Game of Thrones. Another show that likes to pull that rug out from under
you. I know. Oh, you love this person now? Goodbye.
Psych.
Stab the chest.
Do we want to just talk about cliffhanger rankings right now while we are in there?
Yeah, my vote is to put this one at number one.
Yeah, I'm into
it.
It
makes complete sense.
Yeah. It's I feel like it's the most effective. It
just jump the
and
line.
I love that it doesn't end like so many of these cliffhangers, like, no spoilers, but so many of these cliffhangers end with, like, these big, you know, dramatic screams, and it's really fun. It's, you know, and then you get the needle drop, but this one doesn't end like that. It takes this cliffhanger more seriously. It has more gravitas to it, and I like that it kind of just ends in Sookie's just horrified silence.
Yeah, it's much more solemn in the way it handles it. I mean, it's gruesome and horrible, but it's silent. And
it's not campy like so many of the other ones are.
You're left to sit with it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a section to just briefly discuss any new characters we've met. We meet Bill's maker, but I don't think we catch her name.
Mm-mm.
No. We did get to know Hoyt a little bit more. But
Hoyt,
like,
and Terry, I think.
That.
Yeah.
And Terry we got to see,
Yeah, we're, like, a little deep. Well,
Yeah, I don't think there's any.
No spoilers, but you might think we're a little deep into the season for character intros, but we'll
find out. Now let chaos reign.
Chaos is a ladder.
So, Tasia, what is your candidate for most horny? Sorry, most chaotic. I can't even do it properly.
my choice for most chaotic is Jason choosing to do V again immediately after recounting the incredibly traumatic experience he had the first time doing it. Like, he was so easy to just, Lafayette was like, well, but maybe, and Jason's immediately like, yeah, I guess. Okay, cool. Let's do it.
Yeah. Jason
just loves a real ding dong
drugs. And that is a very chaotic choice, which leads directly into my favorite chaotic moment, which is Jason showing up high as shit to the old folks meeting. Like, why would you go stoned there?
I mean, on the other hand, wouldn't you go stoned to the old folks meeting? Otherwise, it's going to be really boring.
True.
That's facts. Facts.
I guess it's funny that we went in this order because I feel like it is the same order.
It's a chronological order of Jason being stupid.
Episode. Yeah. And my candidate is Jason fucking that woman behind the bar. Like,
that is a chaotic and a psychotic choice.
I know that podcasting is not visual, but everyone needs to know that I took a picture from that scene and put it in the notes.
Yeah.
Is it a surprise to literally anyone in the world that Jason continues to be, like, he owns this category for, like this entire season, basically?
I was telling Elise before we started recording, I did not really remember that the first season of the show was, like, the Jason Stackhouse show.
It really is.
But it is.
Yeah. I love Jason so much. So, Melissa, what is your candidate for most horny?
Okay. So, the moment between Tara thinking that Jason might love her and her, or the when, you know, when she thinks that he might come to her sober, actually, before she sees him fucking the woman behind the bar, like how horny she probably was. That's it. Just like all the pent up and emotional in the childhood and the adulthood horniness that has never had a proper outlet was just trying to creep to the surface. And I'm sure she was trying to be like, I'm at work, horniness. I can't do this right now. So, yeah, it's that moment. And then seeing Jason behind the bar is just like a cold glass of water right into the face of all that horniness. Never to be built up to that level again. Ever.
What about you, Tasia?
So, originally I wrote down, I love that Jason, when he goes up to the bar, like the first thing he does is just like reach for Tara's arm, because like, I mean, that's the same, bitch. Like, I am immediately, like, if I have a chance to touch this woman, I am immediately going for the bicep. I want to touch it. I want to give it a little squeeze. It's a good bicep. But then I decided to change my mind, because what I kept thinking about over and over again was the moment when he's sitting next to her in the DGD meeting, mm-hmm. and he looks over at her and she's in like slow motion fanning herself, and you see that like slow run, like that slow drop of sweat run down her neck. That is horny. That is a horny fucking shot. Yes.
Yeah,
and really, I very much like it.
Yes, no, I agree. That's a great scene. My candidate is the way that Lafayette was talking to Jason about the V. This is not necessarily horny between Lafayette and Jason. This is horny between me and the V that I want to do, listening to Lafayette.
And then you're going to say, like, Lafayette and Lafayette and drugs.
Lafayette and drugs.
I don't want to speak on Lafayette's behalf.
Like,
on that,
me but, and the V. Yeah. Like, honestly, me and Lafayette.
It has to happen how Lafayette described it.
Yeah. Or like, it's like, also like competence porn. Like, yeah, I would like to do scary drugs with someone who really knows what they're doing.
Yes. Yeah, because you feel safer. It's like that security blanket. Exactly. Like, this person knows what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that.
Do we want to do a brief spoiler section?
Sure. Love it.
All right, so listeners, this is your cue now. If you have not watched the rest of this series, you probably want to come back in a few minutes. I was going to say go away, but no, come back.
Yeah. I just wanted to clarify that we do spend more time with Bill's maker, and she becomes like a character, right?
Yeah.
I think she's around. I think it's in season two. I just looked it up. Her name's Lorena.
Okay. Lorena. Oh, right. Yeah. These do ring bells. Yeah. Okay.
I think
okay.
She,
I remember that.
I think she plays a pretty big part in season two. I think she like kidnaps Bill again or something, but I remember that she's there yes. at the party with like Godric yes. and Eric and like
yes yeah. yes yes
well
yes.
Speaking of Godric, he is my precious little baby boy. I love him.
I don't
so
know
much.
If I remember who that is.
He's Eric's maker.
Mm-hmm.
And he so he lets himself
like, help save all yeah, their lives, basically.
He lets himself get caught by the I forget what, like that anti-vampire like hate
the Fellowship
group
of the
I
Sun.
Do Fellowship of the Sun. This. Yeah, he lets himself get captured by them, and then his and Eric.
He's kind of like a small
really
man, right?
He is a yeah, small man, yeah. And what I really love about him, I think it's his relationship with Eric is just really beautiful, and it's really touching and very sad. And I like all the Godric stuff a lot.
Yeah,
well,
me too.
I can't wait.
Yeah. What was the other thing that I wanted to? Oh,
was it about the sister?
Well, yeah, Portia.
Yeah.
I think there was, yeah, Portia is.
Yeah, I just don't remember what happens.
Oh, the Bellflower stuff. Yeah, so.
Yes,
now,
yes,
I'm
yes.
trying to remember what the exact connection is, but I feel like Bill's mother was a Bellflower. So
yeah,
he is like an ancestor of something, like some sort of like very distantly related cousin of Andy Bellflower. And that's yes. why when he starts hooking up with Portia later and then they realize like, oh, wait. You're a Bellflower. We are technically related. That's
yes.
creepy.
Yes.
Ugh, what about
my I remember that.
All
yeah.
about that. Oh my God. That's so.
And that's all I got.
Tasia, do you have anything you'd like to plug before we go?
You can find my YA podcast at actyage.com, actyage on the socials, the Instagram and the Twitter. And we've had a very long hiatus, but we are coming back soon. So there is that. And you can also find me on Instagram at RageyCakes.
Mel?
You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd and Blue Sky, all at Mel Yellow.
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Storygraph at chicken_tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. On Blue Sky at chickentendi. You can find my other podcasts, Podrates, a Deep Space Nine rewatch podcast, on Twitter and Instagram at Podrates, and wherever you get your podcast. Thanks very much to DJ Empirical for our theme song. You can find the pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at FangBangersPod. That's bangers with a Z. And email us your chaotic, horny thoughts on True Blood, please, to FangBangersPod@gmail.com. Next week, will be the episode Cold Ground. Until then, I'm Elise, and my blood type is a Fresca.
I'm Tasia. My blood type is divorce boning.
And I'm Melissa, and my blood type is doing drugs under Lafayette's direction.
Hell yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.